CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.
The following is a special CJSF presentation, but it interrupts regularly scheduled programming in this time slot.
This is Audio Evidence, listening in on today's world cultures and lifestyles, and talking about how we are shaped by the world we live in, and about the people and events who have changed our landscape. Evidence of our changing global village comes through documentaries and debate and discussions ranging from technology and the arts to politics and education. Audio Evidence, airing landmarks of the 20th century. Yay!
In the old days, there was no night on earth. It was daylight all the time. The great snake who ruled the world below the waters kept night a prisoner. There were no animals or birds then, and no fishes in the river. The forest was quiet. The daughter of the great snake married an Indian and went to live with him on land. But as the days went by, she grew ill, and her husband feared for her life. "It is always daylight here," she said. "My eyes are dazzled by the sun. Please ask my father in the world below to send me night so that I may sleep again." So the Indian sent for his three most trusted servants. "Go to the great snake beneath the waters," he said, "and tell him that his daughter will die if she has no sleep. Ask him to set night free." The three trusted servants set out in their canoe. They paddled to the home of the great snake beneath the waters. "Your daughter is dying," the servants told the great snake. "We have been sent to fetch night so that she may sleep." When the great snake heard their words, he took night and placed it in a hollow palm nut, which he sealed with resin. "No one must open this except my daughter," he told the servants. "Carry it safely back to her." The three trusted servants took the palm nut and paddled back towards land. But as they went, they heard strange noises coming from the nut. Scratchings, squeakings, croakings, and screeching. The servants were curious. They lit a torch and melted the resin seal. They forgot the warning of the great snake, and they opened the palm nut. Night fell. On that first night, all the living creatures were made. The sticks in the forest turned into animals. The leaves on the trees turned into birds. The stones in the river turned into fishes. And the waterweed turned into frogs and snakes. That night, the jaguar was made. The marmoset, the quetzal, and the hummingbird. The forest was full of the noises of the animals, scratching, squeakings, croakings, and screeching. The three trusted servants had taken no notice of the great snake's words, so they were turned into monkeys and went howling from tree to tree. The daughter of the great snake slept at last. When she awoke, it was still night, so she took two balls of twine and turned them into birds. "One bird to sing at the beginning of night, and another bird to sing at the beginning of day," she said. "Now, only half men's lives will be spent in darkness." From that time, night has always fallen, but during the day, it sleeps beneath the waters.
The winter solstice marks the shortest day of the year. It also marks the longest night. The word solstice comes from the Latin words sol stedit, which mean, literally, the sun stood still. From the observer's point of view on Earth's northern hemisphere, the sun rises and sets further south on the horizon as winter solstice approaches. It rises and sets further north as summer solstice nears, the situation being reversed in the southern hemisphere. The movement of the points of solar rising and setting along the eastern and western horizons quickens in spring and autumn, but slows as the solstices approach. Then, for about 6 days in late December and again in late June, The sun appears to rise and set at almost exactly the same places. Its rising and setting points appear to stand still, hence the name solstice. The solstices divide the year into two halves, 6 months of the waxing sun followed by 6 months of waning sun. These two half-yearly subcycles constitute a pair of complementary opposites, like night and day, light and dark, heat and cold, positive and negative. Ancient peoples knew that everything needs an opposite or complement to give it meaning and vitality. It is the interplay of complementary principles that gives rise to movement and change. But the points of division, the boundaries or edges between complements, are ambiguous, neither this nor that. They are mysterious and magical, belonging to neither this world nor the next, and therefore serve as gateways between dimensions, realities, and states of consciousness. This is why the solstices, as hinges of the seasons, were always regarded as times when the two worlds were especially close. They were times of danger and opportunity, times for special alertness and aliveness. The ancient inhabitants of Europe and the Near East built spectacular passage chambers, stone circles, temples, and pyramids to mark ceremonially the solstices and equinoxes. Half a world away, the indigenous peoples of the Americas had no less passionate an interest in the sun's seasonal cycle. Indeed, for some Native American tribes, the solstices and equinoxes served as the temporal cornerstones of culture. The Chumash Indians of the central Pacific coast of California saw the solstices as times when the earth, human society, and the cosmos all reached points of crisis. On these occasions, the survival of the world depended on the people's performance of appropriate ceremonies. Solar alignments have been found at many Mayan sites. One of the most remarkable examples consists of a group of temples at Huactacun, a ceremonial center in the Guatemalan jungle. If one stands at the top of the western pyramid and faces east, sunrise occurs over three small, equally spaced buildings on a great stone platform. The placement of the northern and southern buildings permits accurate determination of the solstices. On the equinoxes, the sun rises immediately above the central temple. This alignment scheme was copied in at least a dozen other Mayan cities. In Japan, a priest named Mim was sent to China to study Buddhism and astronomy. When he returned, he opened Japan's first astronomical observatory at Asuka and founded the Imperial Department of Astronomy, which was charged with the interpretation of unusual celestial events. The Asuka royal astrologers discovered Halley's Comet in October of 684, nearly a millennium before Edmund Halley was born. But the observatory fell into disuse only a few centuries later, and today all that remains are two carved megaliths. One of these stones, weighing 950 tons, is regarded by tradition as having miraculous powers. The second has a series of grooves along its upper surface that point toward the solstice and equinox sunset points. The Hindu calendar has always been based on the cycles of the moon. Nevertheless, the peoples of many parts of India marked the solstices and equinoxes with festivals. For example, northern Indians greeted the winter solstice with the ceremonial clanging of bells and gongs in order to frighten away hurtful spirits, a custom widespread among all Indo-European peoples. In Tonga, the site of the earliest Polynesian settlements in the Pacific, a huge rough-hewn coral megalith arch 15 feet high and 18 feet long called Ha'amonga'a Maui is aligned to the summer solstice sunrise. Moreover, a series of grooves on the upper surface of the largest of stones points to the winter solstice sunrise.
To pull on your shoes and venture out to explore the night, how would what you imagine from inside your bedroom square with what you would find in the dark world outside it? If you started your night visit just after midnight, when the evening gives way to true night, you wouldn't have to walk too far before finding a companion, because 29 million other Americans are still awake then. And if you are still out between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m., the darkest and farthest part of the night, you wouldn't be alone. 10 million Americans are up and about at that hour. Night is a time, not a place. It is not a dark place you visit like Siberia or a coal mine, but a dark time that daily visits you wherever you are. It occupies the same geographic space as the day, but its defining feature, the absence of light, so dramatically alters the familiar daylight world that the night is often thought of as a separate territory, a sovereign nation even, deserving of its own page in the atlas.
My name is Lloyd Bilbar, and I'm working graveyards at BP station. I like working nights.
Why?
Because there's more interesting people at night. So far, I didn't encounter any problems at working at night. The best about it, I can kick back and relax.
Let's see, this is Dylan Chan. This is Market Street Safeway. And the time right now is about 12:20.
Okay, and what are the hours that you work?
11:30 till 7:30.
Okay, and how long have you worked graveyard?
About 5 years.
5 years, and do you like it? Do you find something?
I do this part-time, so, you know, it doesn't really matter too much.
Uh-huh, so how many days do you work a week?
Sometimes one, sometimes two, sometimes three. I think the benefit is that if I have something to do in the daytime, I can do it without having to take time off. Most of the time I go sleep to about noon.
Excuse me.
And get up for the rest of the day from there. So it's not one of these things that you go home and sleep for 8 hours or whatever, you know. You can sleep till noon and you could probably get away with it for one day a week.
If you had to do this every day, you think you could do it?
I'd probably have to sleep a few more hours.
My name's Lena White, and I work for Muni. I work, I wouldn't really call it graveyard. I work from 9 to 5 in the morning.
Pretty close. Mm-hmm. How long have you been working this shift?
Since August. I've had a bit of a problem adjusting to it. Yeah, around 3 o'clock, it's like, you know, very hard to stay awake.
Do you find any benefits to working this shift?
Yes, it's more serene. It's less people. I like that. It's less traffic.
Your schedule is that you get home, do you go to sleep, or do you stay up? Or
Unfortunately, I go to sleep for maybe an hour, and then I have to get right back up because I have daughters, and I have to comb their hair. So I have to get right back up, and then I go back to sleep for a while, and then wake up. Again, so I don't get the, correct amount of rest that I really need.
Are you working full time?
Yes, I do an 8-hour shift, and it's straight 8 hours. It's, you know, no break, so to speak, like a lunch break or something like that. So it's kind of difficult, you know, to sit somewhere for 8 hours.
Would you choose, if you had an opportunity to get off of the shift, to go on a day shift, or?
Yes, my hours are due to change in January. So yes, I have chosen different hours. I'll be working 5 to 1. Yeah, so I'm going to try that. And I think I'd like that better. That would at least allow me time to sleep at night somewhat. So. Yeah.
Okay, my name is Arson Wilson, and I've been a high-pressure boiler operator for about 13 years now, and I've been working swing for the last 5, but prior to that I worked the graveyard shift for 3 years. The most difficult aspect is when you have young children. I had 2 sons, and one was 2 and the other one was 4, and at that time my wife was working graveyard as well, so we kind of slept in shifts. I'd come home, sleep a couple hours, wake up, she'd sleep a couple hours, and then we both all go to bed together. So that was when it was probably the most difficult, was sleeping.
Do you find any benefits to working graveyard?
Yeah, if I had my way right now, I got both my boys are 8 and 10, and if I could go back on it, I'd do it. Because I basically liked it. And now that they're older, I can just come home and go to sleep during the day and then get up before they're out from school and you know, do things around the house and do things with the kids. I would see more of my kids on the graveyard shift now that they're older, going to school full time. But when they were younger, it was really rough.
Hi, my name's Janice Feichmeyer, and I'm an acupuncturist here in San Francisco. From the point of view of Chinese medicine, actually, the whole history of Chinese medicine, if you go back, is based on an agrarian society, which was very much in tune with the ebbs and flows of the cycles of the earth, or day and night especially. So looking at nighttime is a time in the whole Chinese philosophy when the system is quiet and calm and less active than during the day, when the system is very active and performing all activities. So nighttime is a quiet time, a time when the energy goes very deeply inside and is a time when the body's replenishing itself, just as everything on earth is doing at that time. I think we tend to think we're more separate from the natural flows than we actually are. I mean, although we have artificially created a lot of in our environments things that no longer stick with that. For instance, lighting, and that we can stay up late at night, or jobs that go throughout the night, that sort of thing, where people are forced to break their natural cycles. Some people do believe that there is an evolution going on within the system of the channels in Chinese medicine that is occurring as a result of modern day differences. But in general, I don't think we vary that much from our ancestors in the past who have an ebb and flow related to the natural cycles of day and night. Any kind of shift of that nature in the Chinese system is going to create a lot of imbalance. And any time you have imbalance, there is the potential for the energy shifting in a way that would promote a disease or an illness process versus a healthy process. So it would depend on other factors in the person's life, like their lifestyle, stress, emotional, mental factors, all sorts of other things then would play into whether that would be a beneficial or benign type of shift or a negative shift. If someone is actually starting to feel some physical problems as a result of this type of a schedule, I think I would suggest to them really reconsidering that type of work, because obviously the body is not able to adjust well, and it's creating an imbalance that no matter really what the person does, you could probably, with the help of herbs and acupuncture and assorted other things, diet and stress reduction, that sort of thing, create as much balance as possible. But if that wasn't doing it, then really thinking about changing the job would be important. Now the studies are really showing that you know, and especially in the countries nighttime dominates, I should say, like in the Scandinavian countries, that they actually have created artificial lighting that mimics the sun's rays, so that people can replenish their systems. Vitamin D especially is replenished by exposure to sunlight. So definitely, we all need our share of the sunlight for adequate and vibrant health. Let me just go back to the kind of the philosophy that dominates Chinese medicine is this concept of yin and yang. And yang would be the active energy that comes out during the day and allows us to perform the activities that we do, and the yin aspect of that balance is the nourishing, the more substantial, quiet type of the side of the balance, which comes out and dominates at night. We definitely are constantly trying to balance the aspects of yin and yang in our life, and they should be harmonious and in equal measure one to the other, and I think we just have to continually follow the flows and be aware of the flows of nature, because we are not so much removed from those flows, and when we try to go against those patterns that we truly are inherently ours, then we're going to run into problems, even though we think we're above them and try to create these other structures and things to break those patterns. They're just so powerful that we just can't.
According to the sociologist Murray Melbin, night is the last frontier, and since the invention of artificial lighting, we have colonized it in much the same way and in much the same spirit as the Americans colonized the West in the 19th century. Time is a dimension like space, says Melbin, and people have moved into the realm of night as the hours of daylight have become more congested. The first night people were like the trappers, hunters and drifters who went ahead of the pioneers. They were misfits, solitaries, criminals, people who, for whatever reason, were uneasy with the straight world and had very little to lose. Then came the businessmen, the exploiters, who realized that, with the advent of gaslight, expensive machinery no longer had to lie idle for 8 hours out of 24, and factories could keep producing around the clock. Shift work brought other services in its wake, transport, eating places, bars, and grocery stores. Gradually, as lighting improved, services expanded until now there is a whole after-hours community. Everything from evening classes to supermarkets, night courts, discos, and massage parlors, as well as a great army of maintenance people who service and repair the daytime world while its inhabitants sleep. The defense establishment, the financial markets, broadcasting, transport, communications now work on a 24-hour day schedule. As Melbin sees it, night and day will soon be interchangeable. As we have transformed our environment, so we will transform ourselves, physically, socially, and psychologically, to fit the new 24-hour cycle of work.
Okay, my name's Kenrick Wong. I work at the Hyatt Regency here in San Francisco. The hours I work, God, it can start at 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock the next day. I don't work any specific hours, but this is my third week here at this hotel. I used to work at another hotel where I was scheduled as regular graveyard shift.
Okay, so how long did you work there in the graveyard?
About a year and 4 months. I wouldn't choose it on a regular basis, but I did enjoy working graveyard because you get a lot of things done.
Okay, are there any other benefits you can think of that for working graveyard?
No one bothers you. If I was married, yeah, it definitely would affect the home life, and I've seen it affect people who are married, how it affects their lives. Me personally, I'm single right now, and I live alone, so it's fallen into place. It fell into place.
You didn't have any problems like adjusting to the sleeping, new different sleeping patterns?
Or? No, I could sleep anytime. I mean, that's just me. I could fall asleep anywhere, almost. So.
My name is Seifu Daba, and I'm a cab driver here in San Francisco. I work for Yellow Cab. I work from 5 to 3, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Until 3 in the morning. That's my normal shift. I like working nights, you know, less traffic, and people are not stressed. People are relaxing, you know, they're going to home or somewhere to an entertainment place, to dinner, to concerts, or to any shows. So it's good time for me, it works for me.
If you had a chance to change to another shift, would you do that, or?
No, I like this shift.
My name is Nancy Gumley, and I'm a nurse at UC San Francisco. I work in the critical care unit, and for the most part, I work 7 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. I do some moving around on my shifts. I do some day shifts, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But I actually like the night shift the best. The nice thing about nights is the character of the hospital is completely different. It's like it's a separate entity from what you see during the day there. There's different things going on. The patients aren't always sleeping in the ICU, and that's interesting, but there's not a lot of the hustle and bustle of what goes on in the daytime. There's not, the head nurses aren't there. You know, there's only a few physicians instead of hundreds. You don't have to fight a crowd to get to your patient or to get to the chart. You know, you're there and you're pretty much running the show. It's hard to sleep during the day sometimes. But because I work 12-hour shifts, I'm tired when I get home. So I do sleep for 6 or 7 hours. I think it's harder if I just worked an 8-hour shift. It'd be harder to get to sleep in the morning. But I do only sleep for, say, 6 hours during the day, and I make it up on my days off. I sleep a lot or take it easy. But that's the only negative. There isn't any other. On my first day off, I'll come home from work at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll go to bed. I'll wake up at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and I'll be ready for bed again at 10 o'clock that night. No problem. That, I think for a lot of my coworkers, that's a tough time to go back to sleep. You've already slept that day, but I don't have any problem. I go right back to sleeping at night like a normal person. And tonight, I'm working tonight. I haven't slept during the day. I'll just kind of tough it out and stay up for 24 hours. When I'm working, I just work this whole weekend. When I'm working, I can't do anything except eat, sleep, and work. So, you know, it's hard to have a set social life. It's hard to do something every Wednesday night or every Thursday night or go out every weekend. It's just not like that.
Well, my name's Vincent Lopez, and I work for APS. My hours are from 11 till 7 in the morning.
Uh-huh. Okay, and how long have you been working this shift?
3 weeks, just 3 weeks. This is my first time to work graveyard. At first, it's a little hard because you have to keep awake. And the good thing about working graveyard is the whole day you're free. And that's it. You have to stay awake. That's the hard part. That's the hardest part, working graveyard.
Has it affected your social life?
Yeah, a little, because during the day you have to, you know, get some rest.
Mm-hmm. How many hours of sleep do you normally get now?
About 4 to 5 hours during the daytime. 4 hours, 5 hours is enough.
My name's Laura Nennemaker. I work at Kinko's, 1967 Market Street. My hours are 11 at night to 7:30 in the morning.
Okay, and how long have you been working this shift?
This shift, about 5 or 6 months. Normally there are less people around, so that's always nice. It's nice and quiet outside, it's peaceful. I don't like the mad rush, so I prefer it that way. It's easy to get like doctor's appointments and stuff like that during the day because you're available. And basically, I just like to be up at night and sleep during the day. So sometimes sleeping can be difficult if you start doing too much during the day and then you realize you haven't slept. It happens sometimes. But other than that, it is a little difficult. My boyfriend works day, so but our weekends are the same. So we get together on our weekends and visit each other at work. That works out okay.
If you had a chance to change shifts, is that something you would think about doing?
No. I changed to this shift from working swing shifts, so.
All night, it's all right. All night, yeah, it's all right. Working on a forklift in the night shift. Forklift from
My name is David Clayman, and I'm a doctor at the UCSF Sleep Disorders Center, which is at Mount Zion in San Francisco. And we take care of people who have problems with sleep of any kind, and it's most commonly sleep apnea.